Welcome to this afternoon's NAESP webinar for aspiring principals on essential skills to prepare for school leadership. With us this afternoon, our speakers are Allison Apsey. She's the principal of Quincy Elementary School in Zeeland, Michigan, and Kim Taylor, principal of Curran Early Childhood Center in Dedham, Massachusetts. So let's begin with our speakers.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kim Taylor, and I'm glad to be with you this afternoon for this webinar. We're going to be talking this afternoon about the essential skills to prepare for school leadership. Our session objectives for today are that you as participants will be able to reflect upon personal and professional values of being a school leader, name at least two essential skills of school leadership, and provide examples of how to develop or exhibit these skills. And Allison and I hope that with the information that we give you this afternoon, that you'll be able to come to conclusions around those objectives for this afternoon.
Well stated, Kim. Thank you.
You're welcome. So we're going to start with a poll, which Honor is going to help us to run. And the question on the poll is on the screen in front of you. Which of the following values and skills do you feel are the most essential when considering a school leadership position? Organization, authenticity, relationship builder, academic preparation, risk taker, innovator or change agent, and lifelong learner. So we're going to ask you to take a moment to fill that out, and we will give you the results of that to move on. Yes, we can. So the results clearly show that relationship building is, to this group of people, the most important skill and value of going into school leadership. And with authenticity coming behind, innovator and change agent at 5%, lifelong learner at 8%, but 77% took it away. Relationship builder was the winner for this poll. So that's great. I think Allison and I would both agree with you. Would you say so, Allison?
100%. And all of you are actually in the exact right spot right now. So glad to have you here.
That's great. So we're going to move on, and we're going to talk a little bit about the different skills that I, in my leadership role, have always felt to be essential in what I do. And the way we'll go about that this afternoon is looking at some quotes and looking at some pictures and hearing about some examples. So we're going to start with this quote today. I'm starting with authenticity. The power of authentic leadership is found not in external arrangements, but in the human heart. And we're going to ask you just in the chat box if you could think about these questions on this next slide. Who am I? Are you the same person as you are a leader? Always be yourself, now, then, and always. Don't try to be someone else. It doesn't work. People see through that. And what do you value as a person? And do you value that as a leader also? So in the chat box, if you could just write a few words about what stands out to you about authenticity in preparing for school leadership. We'll watch the chat box and the thoughts that people have on authenticity. And what I wanted to just kind of talk about here is on the next page, there's some pictures that you'll see that really highlight who I am as myself and as a leader. And I think the first one you'll see is my family. They are first and foremost in my life. They probably certainly sometimes would say that wasn't true, that my job comes first. And the other pictures that you'll see there, one example that I had through my leadership time is that a couple of years ago, my dad was very sick, and you can see a picture of him down in the corner. And throughout that entire process of his illness and his passing, I was very upfront and authentic and honest with my staff about what was going on and actually shared with them daily updates because I felt that that was who I was and that's who I really needed to be during that time, is that I didn't try to hide behind something. It was part of my life and who I was. And that piece really was a clear example of how I felt I was showing authentic leadership. It was who I was, it was what was going on in my life, and I wasn't trying to hide anything from anyone. And the other couple of things you'll see there, Allison, if you want to click on the video.
This is
me being myself during Dr. Seuss Week and reading my students on Read Across America Day from the roof of the building in the cat and hat costume. The important thing about this is that there are certainly principals in the state, in the world, who wouldn't do that. That isn't who they are. And they wouldn't think about even trying that. So I think it's really important that, you know, you'll hear lots and lots of ideas and you'll hear lots and lots of things that other principals are doing, but it's really important that you are the person that you want to be in your leadership role, because if you try to do things that aren't who you are, people will see right through it. And, you know, you might not want to dress up in a crayon costume. And that's just who I am. And the authenticity piece is huge for me. Very close to the relationship building piece. So I encourage you to think about who you are as a person and how that translates into a leadership role that you might have one day.
Allison, there's a lot of great comments. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, Angelica wrote that she believes people follow leaders and not titles. And being authentic is very important. Beth said, I am who I am at all times. I'm transparent and always there for my husband, kids, colleagues, students. I'm a leader and not a boss. I'm a learner, and that means learning from my staff. What a good point. I'll never know everything, and I believe life in general should be fun, and so should learning. And then just one last comment. I think it was Amanda said, you spend so much time working in your schools daily, you have to be your authentic self. It would be so tiring to keep up a facade and to keep a facade in place for that much time, which is so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one thing to piggyback on that is that, like, I'm a person who wears my feelings on my sleeve, basically. So people really know who I am and if I'm not having a great day, which I think is really important, because as someone mentioned, if you're not, you know, people will see right through that. And I think it's really important to just remember. Somebody else might not be the type of leader that or person that shares their feelings a lot. And that's okay too. So we're going to move on to the next skill. And the quote that I chose for this is, in line with what the poll showed us today. So I'm glad to see that we have matches going on. The fundamental pillars of school leadership are relationships. Nothing substitutes for building and nurturing them. And all of you in the poll almost felt like relationship building was first and foremost. And I truly believe that, you know, we can't get any of our work done if we're not forming relationships with people. So we can move on, Allison. And these are kind of my thoughts about relationships. They need to be first and foremost. And one thing I learned in not such a great way in one of my principalships is that people need to come before their positions. And I actually had a prior supervisor say to me, positions before people. And, you know, I'm not working in that district anymore. and that had a huge effect on me, that I couldn't do what I needed to do unless relationships could come first. So I always encourage you to remember to get to know people before their positions. For me, it's beginning, middle, and end all the time. And if I forget about that, that's when I find myself in a really bad place, for whatever reason. And on the next slide, I want to just highlight the point of all stakeholders all the time. And it's not just about relationships with kids. It's not just about relationships with families or staff or colleagues or the community. It's everyone all together all the time, beginning, middle, and end. And this just shows some examples of the relationships that I've formed in my new position that I'm in my second year in, and how important all of those stakeholders are in what we do every day.
I love these pictures, Kim.
Oh, thanks. before we go on to that next slide, Allison, I just want to make sure we check in and see if there's anything that people wanted to say about ways that they have felt in your current position, whatever it might be, that you felt a negative opportunity or a scenario where relationships clearly didn't come first and how that affected you. So if you have an example and you want to type that into the chat box, that would be great.
I see that there's a lot of comments still about authenticity. Someone said that the teacher's room, so the staff lounge, and that can be a hotbed for some negativity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Administrators who have little trust and micromanage everything, lack of communication, especially now that we're not able to physically be together.
I know. And you know what? That's a really interesting point, Allison, that you bring up. I was saying a little earlier that this situation that we're currently in even highlights these particular skills and values more for me. The relationship building piece is huge. You have to do it differently, but you have to keep doing it. And, you know, we're all tired and we're all exhausted and But you know what? I'm showing that to my staff. So there's the authenticity piece. Right. Like, if I'm tired, I'm tired. And if I'm having a bad day, if they ask how I am, I tell them. So these values that I have and values that people have coming into a role, like, should be all the time and regardless of the circumstances. But this has just highlighted it for me even more so, because of the times that we're currently living in. There's a lot on here about micromanagers. It sounds like people are having lots of experiences with micromanagement. Oh, and there's a question about starting a new leadership position during this pandemic. How would you suggest building relationships? I wish I could talk to that person who wrote that. I think, you know, the way in which the district that you're going to is choosing to reach out to staff is really important, making sure that you're understanding of how the communication goes in that district and connecting in any way that you possibly can with people. That doesn't necessarily mean online. If you can get a hold of their phone numbers and call them and have a conversation with them, send them a letter, send them a note, a postcard in the mail, send them an email. If you can get that contact information, I know when I enter new leadership roles, I always do an entry plan. So I have entry interviews with every staff member, and that could easily still be done virtually or on the phone, just picking some questions that you could ask to every staff member, the same questions, so that you can gather some data and see. And in those questions, there's definitely questions about who they are. Those are my first questions when I talk to people, is finding out who they are, pushing the papers aside and saying, who are you? You know, talk to me about who your kids are, your grandkids, that kind of thing, because that's what people are going to remember and connect with you about. One admin had their door shut and wouldn't talk to the teacher unless she scheduled an appointment. There was no relationship building. Wow. That's like foreign to me. What do you think of that, Allison?
Oh my gosh. Yes. That's a no.
The culture definitely is affected if the relationships are not important. And I've been in buildings, worked in districts where, relationships don't come first. And that causes problems all around. So being yourself, forming relationships with people, and then the next thing I wanted to talk about was just around collaboration and how important it is to be a collaborator and a communicator with people that you can learn from. And somebody said that earlier on in the chat, I think, about learning from other people, you know, as administrators. When I was first an administrator, I thought I needed to have all the answers. And asking for help and collaborating with people, to me at that time, was a weakness. So I think encouraging people who are going into school leadership to really, it's a strength to reach out, and it's a strength to learn from other people. If we don't, then we get stuck in a rut. And I think it's really important to be able to step beyond yourself and learn from other people. I'm just watching the chat too.
So there's a question from one of the attendees. How would you handle a relationship if you were hired over an internal candidate?
That's interesting. Allison, feel free to pop in on these questions too. I don't feel like I need to answer them all. Well, I think for that is, it's about, again, it comes back to the relationship piece. For me, I would really feel, really, really, that it was really important to actually sit and have a conversation with that person. As difficult as it might be, because they probably, who knows if they're upset or angry, but again, it's about forming a relationship with someone, not trying to say why you should have got, you know, you got the position and they didn't, but trying to see how they're feeling about it, especially if they're a staff member. They're going to be your staff member. What would you say, Allison?
So I think that this is one of the reasons why it's so important when you start a new position that you are first a learner, because you can't go in and fix problems when you don't know what the problems really are. So you, like Kim, you said you have this entry plan and it's interviews and it's getting to know people on a personal and professional level. And George Kiros gives one piece of input to especially new leaders, and that is to learn a strength for every single staff member before you implement any kind of changes. And so I think that could be helpful even in this situation where you're hired over an internal candidate. If you learn about a strength of that internal candidate and then go to them for help and empower them, I think that could help turn the relationship around.
Mm-hmm. And also piggybacking on that is finding out what it is that they would like to do. Like there's something that you can give them that empowers them also, whether it's related to their strength or just a personal interest that they have that they might want to pursue in the building. And I see a question about how to keep a balance in the personal and professional relationships. For me personally, and then I'll let Allison kind of chime in, is that I'm the type of person, because I'm who I am, is I say to people, like, there's a boundary. Like, I can't do that with you. Or, you know, very often staff will say, will you come and do this with us? Or will you go in? And sometimes if it's a staff like get together or gathering for a particular reason, that's fine. But I've been asked questions before about going out after work and those kinds of things. And I don't beat around the bush. Like I just say, like, I draw a line. I have to do that. And they understand. They're just trying. It's part of that they feel comfortable enough that there's been a relationship formed to be able to do that. But I think that it's really important to be clear and not beat around the bush.
And I think, like, one of the things that is helpful is to not have any kind of outright favorites within the staff. So if you're building relationships as equally as possible with all of the staff members and you don't exclusively hang out with any particular group, you can avoid some of that overlap between the personal and professional. Like, if I go out with the staff, I leave before anybody else leaves, and that they just know that, and that's just the way it is, and it's just helpful to not cross those boundaries.
It's so interesting seeing what people are writing about feeling like they have to know everything, and I'm glad that you're reassured that you don't have to know all the answers, Tanya. That's really important. And don't feel like if you ask for help, it's a weakness. I learned the hard way with that. You get overwhelmed and burnt out pretty quickly. So when it comes to collaborating and communicating, I think it's really important you can for you to think about these questions. When you enter a collaborative situation, what's your stance? What kind of message are you sending or vibe are you sending? And what is your communication style? So think about in the chat for a few minutes the question, how do you enter a collaborative situation? And I want you to think honestly about this, because of course we all like to think that we enter those situations with an open mind, but sometimes we don't. So I think it's really important to just think for a minute, when you come upon a situation where it is involved with collaboration, how do you enter? I just be curious, listen and observe, listen more, talk less, present that. What can I do to help? Great question. Having an agenda, that definitely helps. Kathy, that's great that you're willing to admit that this is something that you need to work on. I think that that's a great reflection. Lots of listening and reflecting. So that's a great place to be. And I think when you are collaborating and communicating, always keep in mind it's for students, for growth, and for change. Your collaboration should always be for students first. All right. And this just shows some pictures. The one important point I'll make here, and we're going to have to move on pretty quickly, is that when you are collaborating and communicating, I strongly encourage you to step outside your own world. I've been an administrator for 15 years, and it wasn't until 2 years ago that I really stepped outside my own world, my own district, my own people. And you can see there in the bottom right-hand picture is an opportunity that I pursued to do an interview with NAESP, with two of the NAESP fellows. And that was completely stepping outside my comfort zone, just going and asking someone if I could do something. And it grew me immensely. It was 1 hour of my life, but it grew me as a professional tremendously, because now I have those people as resources and feel really blessed that I've expanded my world. It's just like when I attended the National Principals Conference. Like, I feel like I opened my world tremendously, and I never would have done that before. So I think when it comes to learning and growing and collaborating, think about outside of your own self, because that's how we grow. And the last piece I'm just going to do quickly is the way to develop the best in a person is by appreciation and encouragement. And when you go into a leadership role, always remember that the people that you work with need to be appreciated for what they do. And we as leaders sometimes get so caught up in everything that we have to do, all of our responsibilities, and can forget that, you know, just to say a simple thank you for things. And on the next slide, I just think I have pictures. You can skip to the next slide, Allison. These are just some examples of different things that I have done for both my colleagues. The Principal's Corona Survival Kit are kits that I made up and hand-delivered to all my principal colleagues that had, like, different things inside, and room service tags I've done with staff, and you can see the different examples of things. And these are things that not everybody could do. It's just not their thing. But this is part of me and who I am as a leader authentically, and about forming relationships. And people, when they feel appreciated, they'll do more. There's a quote out there that says, those who feel appreciated will work harder. And I think it's really important when you go into a leadership role that you figure out how you're going to appreciate the people that work around you and with you, because that's the way progress is made, and that's the way change is made, when you form relationships and you have are your authentic self.
Kim, can you share what was in the Corona kit? Someone had a question about that.
Oh, sure. I have to think. There were, first of all, there was a bottle of Corona beer. Then there was some Tootsie Rolls for, like, we have to roll with the punches. There was some gum that had a little saying that said, we need to stick by each other. There were mints that for thank you for your commitment to your schools. I'm trying to think what else was, lifesavers, because we're all lifesavers for our staff and each other. Tissues in case you need a bit good cry. So just little, you know, plays on words of different kinds of little things.
Okay. Awesome.
All right. Thank you, everyone, so much. I'm going to turn over to Allison now for her section of our presentation.
Thank you, Kim. Hopefully we'll have time for some other questions at the end, but you'll find that what I am going to share ties right into what Kim just shared. So Kim and I are connected through our national organization and just through social media. So it's been fun to learn from her, but I want to talk about helping others discover the best in themselves, because really at the core of leadership, that's our job. Our job is to help our staff discover the best in themselves, because that is when they're going to be their best selves for students. So there is absolutely no place I'd rather be than right here, right now with you. And I'm going to play a little song to prove it. Whoops. Can you hear? You know what song that is? It's a long intro. I love this song too. It's Rather Be by Clean Bandit. And I say this because, I mean, is this the absolute 100% truth? Like, would I rather be maybe on a beach, or would I rather be at Quincy Elementary than at home on this webinar? Maybe, but you know what? This is where I am. So if this is where I am, then I might as well want to be right here than anywhere else. And this is something that I think it's important as a school leader to think about every single day, and how we greet teachers when they enter the building, or like right now, how we greet teachers as they enter a Zoom meeting. Do they know that there is no place that we'd rather be than right there, right then, with them? I think we have a responsibility as colleagues when we meet with colleagues to help others feel like there's no place I'd rather be than right here with you, because sometimes we have to fake it till we make it. And I think that's okay. We can still be authentic and fake it till we make it. But I think those around us deserve for us to just help them feel like there's no place we'd rather be than right there with them. So this is me. And this is one of my fifth grade teachers, bless his heart. I'm like, I use your picture everywhere, Jesse. And Jesse's just being a goofball alongside me. But I want to share this, because this is also me. And I'm this one. So you can look in my mom's hand, there's an Epcot Center brochure. Yet this is how my face looks. And I share this with you in a little bit of a humility, but also because those glasses are awesome and look at those bangs. But because being this, like, you know, positive, look on the bright side, yet share the bad stuff and the dark side too, so that we can be authentic. Like, this stuff doesn't come necessarily natural to me. So I start my days with playlists or inspiring YouTube videos so that I'm able to get my headspace into the person I need to be in order to get the things done. So I focus more on who do I need to be that day than what do I need to do, like what's on my to-do list. And I think that's really important for school leaders to stay zoned in on who do we need to be. If you know me at all, I'm out there as hashtag serendipity EDU, and that's because serendipity is my thing. I even have serendipity now. And but my idea of serendipity is not just that Webster dictionary, which is happy accidents. It's this mindset where we go through life looking for happy accidents and beautiful lessons in everything we experience. And I think this COVID-19 crisis is no exception. We can find happy accidents and beautiful lessons and all that we're learning about the importance of being connected, even when we can't physically be together, in different ways we can be connected. In at least in everything we go through, minimally, we'll learn empathy for others who go through similar situations. So one of the things that I think it's important to think about is that there's always more to someone's story than what meets the eye. There is more to Kim's story than what meets the eye. There's more to my story than what meets the eye. Everyone is fighting a battle we know nothing about. And I love this quote, be kind, always. This is my family and I love them dearly. Two of them are home with me right now and I'm like, you have to be quiet while we're on this webinar, and they're doing a great job right now. But I have an 18-year-old son named Lane, and I have a 13-year-old son named Tyson, and that's my husband, Jim. And my 18-year-old son just graduated this past year, and we're so fortunate that he was able to have a graduation, and that this happened last year rather than this year. But to be honest, we were really grateful just in general that my son graduated, because he's the kind of kid who, you know, he'd bring home straight D minuses one semester. You can't get straight D minuses by accident. And he qualified for a gifted program as an elementary student. So it was definitely by choice. And that's a pretty like humbling experience to be, this is my 16th year as a principal. And I've been a principal of all levels, and to have a son who disliked school so much that we were just praying for a graduation day and that he would get through was a great learning experience for me. And this guy is going to be a huge success in life. Like he was a square peg trying to fit into the round hole of school, and it just didn't work for him. There's more to my story. There's more to everyone's story. And so then the question is, how does knowing that there's always more to someone's story help as a school leader? How can we take this lesson and infuse it into our schools or our future leadership opportunities to help us be better leaders? I see Deanna said empathy and compassion. Yes, you can be more empathetic to others and more understanding. So if you know, Kim described that, you know, she wears her emotions on her sleeve, and if she's having a bad day, someone's going to know that she's having a bad day just by her disposition. And knowing that there's always more to the story, like, I'm not going to take offense to Kim and like the fact that maybe she's not as smiley as she normally is. I'm not going to think, oh, that's about me, because it's really about what's going on in Kim's story. Utilizing your emotional intelligence. Like, yes, I think that's Elizabeth hit the nail on the head, because it is so important for school leaders to have that emotional intelligence. Shelley says, remembering not to jump to conclusions. Yeah, so awesome thoughts, you guys. I love reading those. So thinking about this lesson of knowing that there's always more to someone's story than what meets the eye, how can we take that lesson and be even better tomorrow? Or, you know, if you have a Zoom meeting right after this, how can you be even better? And so there's four lessons here. And one is that people need our grace, not our judgment. Like in my own personal beliefs, I believe there is an ultimate judge, and it's not me. And I believe if there's anything that's really good to procrastinate, it is judgment. Because once we know more about the story, it's going to change our perception of someone else. So in, you know, best case scenario is just give grace that judgment. And then the other thing, and Kim alluded to this, stop seeking perfection. It doesn't exist. As school leaders, we're not going to have all of the answers. So it is okay to ask for help. It's okay to ask for help from your teachers or your support staff or your colleagues. Or like Kim and I have learned, this greater global network, if we're not able to find people to collaborate with in our district. I think Evan maybe asked a question about that earlier. What if you don't have people in your district who are willing to collaborate and get creative with you? Well, seek that outside your district. Find a PLN on Twitter or join some kind of Facebook group. There's a lot of different ways we can get connected and collaborate. We also...
There's a question about how about someone who doesn't agree with your vision for the school?
So I think there's just multiple layers to an answer to that question, because I think, first of all, as a principal, as a leader, it's important to collaborate with that vision so that from the ground level, others are working on creating that vision with you. So I don't know if you're referring to staff members or to like central office. It just depends on the approach to take. But I think Beth Huff and Shelley Burgess said in their book, Lead Like a Pirate, they said people don't tear down what they've helped build. So as much as possible, if we can have others help build whatever we're creating, that vision we're creating, they're not going to tear it down. And I mean, this is my 16th year as a principal, and I absolutely found that to be true. So, and then one other really important point I want to make here is that as a school leader, it is so hard, but so important to not expect other educators to be like you or like me. So when I first started as a principal, I was thinking like, I mean, this is a no-brainer. Why wouldn't the teacher think the way that I think? And they just won't. It's never going to happen. I'm never going to find a school full of Allison Apseys, and heaven forbid, that would be craziness if that were the case. but others are not going to think like us. So really asking a lot of questions to try to get to, you know, what's the root of their feelings or the root of their thoughts is really important, and understanding that they're not going to behave like us. They're not going to act like us. Another important point in helping others discover the best in themselves is this. When we treat students the way they have always been treated, they will behave the way they've always behaved. And I like to think of the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray, where he wakes up and it's the same exact day over and over and over again until he made some changes with how he reacted. And then he was able to move forward. So we have these students who, you know, get all their new supplies, put it in their backpacks, throw their backpacks on their back and march into school for the new school year. And they expect like, okay, it's going to be better. Things are going to be different. And then bam, they're hit with the same exact expectations and the way that we're talking with them as they were last year. And we can have the best of intentions. We can pull everything from our toolbox to try to help a child. But sometimes until we access new tools or new ways of thinking, we can't help them make that change. And the same is true for staff. If we treat staff the way they've always been treated, they're going to behave the way they've always behaved. And Kim is so humble when she talks about her leadership philosophy. And she's like, this is the way I think, but not the way that everybody thinks. But some of the things that Kim was saying, like if you don't think that way as a school leader, you're going to run into a lot of trouble. Because if you're not showing appreciation, like we saw with all the comments, like you are not going to keep teachers. You are not going to have staff that is healthy and satisfied in their role as professionals. And so we have to think outside of the box and how can we support staff, especially as they're supporting students who have struggles that we've never really encountered. There's, trauma-informed education, and our teachers are trying to meet students halfway, and we've got to meet them. This is the take on that Gandhi quote, change yourself and the world changes. So a few tools to use as a school leader, and this is the power struggle avoider. I definitely recommend using this because you can even think about when you have a power struggle with a student, you get into this power struggle and either you win or the student wins. And if you win, the student loses. And if the student wins, you lose. And the same is true with staff members. Like we don't want losers in our school. So let's avoid power struggles by really, like you guys were talking about, listening, and really empathizing and getting to know like what are these underlying feelings and what's the reason for that. And then this one I love, it's naive body spray. Like you cannot find this at Walgreens, but it is something if you spray it all over, you just assume that everyone wants good things for themselves and others. And if we can walk through our lives just assuming from our student who's throwing a fit on the floor to our staff member who's throwing a fit in the staff lounge, if we just assume that they want good things for themselves and others, we're going to approach them with a very generous spirit rather than assuming that they are trying to cause trouble or want bad things. And I joke that you could leave this like in the staff bathroom and like Mrs. Grumpy Pants, because we all have a Mr. or Mrs. Grumpy Pants in our school, like they can spray it all over, you know, after they use the bathroom, and then just mistakenly they'll walk out assuming everybody wants good things for themselves and others. But that's a really good assumption to make. And then this is an emotions deflector. And like in our classrooms, we would always have like that one student who, like if they're having a bad day, everybody's having a bad day. Or in our schools, that one staff member, if they're having a bad day, everybody's having a bad day. But this is an idea of like Allison Apsey, you can keep your own emotions no matter how anybody is behaving around you. And it can be really hard, especially when we're driving and my husband has like road rage and is super grumpy. It's hard for me to stay cheerful and positive. But I really actually think about this. Like this is a rubber deflector that I just wear and his emotions just bounce right off me and I'm able to continue along my merry way. And it's just one of those mental tools, emotional tools that can help us set how the school is going to feel rather than allowing, you know, a student who is struggling or a staff member who's in crisis to decide how the entire school is going to feel. So this concept is trauma-informed supports benefit all people, and that means all students and all staff members and all families. I want to just go back to Demetra's shared that Hamish Brewer states in his Relentless book that all too often an adult tries to hold a student accountable without ensuring that students maintain dignity and the situation either escalates or the student shuts down and loses all respect for adults. And I would say that that's true with staff members too. We need to make sure that we're allowing staff members to maintain their dignity and students and parents, like angry parents when they come in, like give them opportunities to maintain their dignity. Yeah, that's awesome. So just thinking about you guys, I'm sure have had some training in trauma-informed practices, but thinking about how someone might choose fight, flight, or freeze over pausing and problem solving. So this is from a TED Talk. So it's just imagine that you're walking in the forest and you see a bear. Immediately, your heart starts to pound, your pupils dilate, your airways open up, and you're either ready to fight that bear or run from the bear, or you just freeze. I'm a freezer. I don't know. What do you guys, fight, flight, or freeze? I'm definitely a freezer. So that's wonderful. If you're in the forest and there's a bear, like that fight, that flight, or the freeze can benefit you in the forest when you're facing a bear. But the problem is what happens when that bear comes home every night and the system is activated over and over again, and it goes from being adaptive or life-saving to maladaptive or health-damaging. And that's from Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris's TED Talk, which is an absolute wonderful TED Talk to watch. So this is from the Whole Brain Child Workbook. When we think about how our brain functions, this downstairs brain versus the upstairs brain. And in quick summary, the downstairs brain is that fight, flight, or freeze response. And the upstairs brain is that sound decision-making and planning. So we have many students and honestly staff members who, like, their initial response is defensiveness. Like, I had a student who I'd ask, like, do you have a pencil? And he's, why should I have a pencil? You know, immediately going to that fight response because that's what's ingrained. It's maladaptive. And we, versus other students who can use that sound decision making and know that asking about a pencil is not that big a deal. But we have staff members who have been burned by principals, burned by parents, you know, they've been hurt by students, and they have this, the same kind of issue with going straight to the downstairs brain rather than using the upstairs brain. This is from Help for Billy by Heather Forbes, which is another great resource. And this is that window of stress tolerance. And this is an example of a typical student, Andy, who has this huge window of stress tolerance. So he comes into school and that straight across line in Andy's like window of stress tolerance shows how much stress he comes into school with. So he's got he can deal with a lot of stress in school before he gets to his breaking point, as opposed to Billy, who's has a trauma background, has maladaptive strategies, comes into school with a ton of stress already on his plate. And so he can take just a very little bit of stress at school before he gets to his breaking point. And as a school leader, this window of stress tolerance applies to teachers too. Like, there is so much stress that happens in the day. And some of the stress, like, we don't think of as stressful, but there's just all of this piled on for a teacher. And this is just a fraction of the things that are piled on. And now this list can change completely with COVID-19, right? Because there's all these other different stress factors. And so teachers have a small window before they get to their breaking point. Like, sometimes the window's a little bit larger and sometimes the window's smaller. Like, when we're trying all of this new curriculum, or they're trying new things and they're feeling really unsure about themselves, they're going to have a small window before they get to their breaking point. And what might fill that window of so that they reach their breaking point? We can make some comments in the chat. There's a couple questions. So I see that I think Rosemary asked, would you fire or let a teacher or let go a teacher who doesn't agree with your vision for the school? And how would you handle a situation like this as a principal? And Kim, too, you can pipe in. But I think it does go back to making sure that there's really good communication and transparency and that teachers are intricately involved in the creation of the vision for the school. So when I entered Quincy Elementary 6 years ago, I didn't come in like guns a-blazing, like ready to make changes, even though I readily saw some changes that some improvements that I thought that maybe I could help create, because I knew that for sustainability and to have everybody on board, we needed to create that together and decide, you know, who are we as Quincy Elementary staff? what do we want to provide to our students, our families, and to each other in our community? And then how can we go about doing that? And when we create that together, there is very little instance of teachers who don't jump on board. And sometimes they jump on board right away. And sometimes you need to give them a little bit of time. There's that the quick adapters. There's this others who are slower adapters. And then every once in a while, you're going to have someone who just like completely, no matter all your efforts, completely bucks the system. And then you have to, you know, have those conversations of like, is this the place for you? And you can have completely transparent conversations where like, this is who we are. This is what we do. This is what you're doing. It's not aligned. Like, where do we go from here? And try to figure that out together.
And I think also in that question is a question from you as the principal is, how is this person affecting students? Because, you know, everything we do should be done in the best interest of students. So if in fact that person, whatever it is they're doing to buck against the vision is directly impacting students, then I think you have even an easier decision to make.
Absolutely.
That if it's not, you know, if it's affecting adults and not students, maybe it's a workable situation, but if it's affecting students, then to me, it's an easier answer.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah. This is just did I stop sharing the screen?
You did.
Yes.
If you could share it back, that would be awesome.
Yep. I didn't mean to. Okay. So, I am going to share computer sound and then I'm going to show you just a little staff appreciation thing that I did. That was pretty fun. So this was full moon, Friday the 13th, pirate day, and there was a thunderstorm. So I created this Zen zone for teachers. I gave up my office for the day and just had this kind of music playing, the lights low, beverages and snacks, and just a spot for them to get away. These are my secretary's paint models. So I even had like eye masks in there. Just an example of a super fun way to keep your teachers a little fountain. This is another example of how to support teachers in with trauma-informed practices. We ask teachers to check in with students to see how they're feeling. And one of the things that I started doing this past year is a Monday morning staff check-in. Just how are you feeling about the week ahead? I'm doing great, looking forward to the week. I have lots of work to do, but I'm going to be okay. I'm overwhelmed and need some extra TLC or help me. I could really use some help with something, and then putting comments in the other. And then I changed this to be a like a COVID-19 Monday morning staff check-in. And it's been huge because I try to get around and talk to everybody, but they might be in a conversation with someone else or, you know, teaching students or whatever. This is an awesome way for me to see, like, how are you feeling about the week ahead? And the responses I get when it's conference week and the grades are due are way different than when it's, you know, a kind of typical week. So it's really good for me to get a feel of how the staff is feeling overall, but then how I can help individual staff members. So this is an example of how I follow up. When teachers or staff members say help me or there's other kind of comments, I actually highlight it in yellow and then I change it to green when I have helped them. And during COVID-19, I am doing a form like this for families also. And just keeping this kind of organization is really important because asking the question is good, but doing something about it is the most important thing. So that follow through makes this that I get almost 100% response from teachers every time I send this out. I have over 100 families who are responding to me via this check-in. So that's it's been really helpful in order to provide the support that I want to provide. Okay, so we're going to zoom through this really quick, and this is going back to that concept that all behavior is purposeful. It's not personal. And as a school leader, it is so important to keep this in mind all the time. And it's not easy. We have to have pretty thick skin because all the problems of the school, they're supposed to, you know, end up on our doorstep if others can't solve it. So just thinking about William Glasser's five basic needs, and that everybody is behaving to meet their needs for power, fun, survival, love and belonging, and freedom. And as a school leader, I can create a school that is need satisfying. So teachers are easily able to meet these needs within the structure of the school. Teachers can make classrooms that are need satisfying so that students are easily able to meet these needs within the structures of their classroom. But understanding that we're always behaving to meet one or more of these five basic needs helps us understand that someone else's behavior is not about me, even though sometimes it feels like it's about me. It's really about them and what they're going through. And these are just some questions as food for thought of, what need do you have the most trouble meeting for yourself during the school day? And often it's freedom. Like right now, we have a lot more freedom with being a stay-at-home principal or stay-at-home teacher. Maybe not. It just depends on how old your children are, right? And what need do you have the most trouble meeting for yourself in their personal life? Because these needs are not exclusive to our lives at school. And then as a leader, how might we make school more need-satisfying for teachers? Doing things like that Kim suggested with all of those appreciation things. I do those room service tags and just really fun things in order to make sure that teachers feel appreciated. But this is also about like the day-to-day normal kind of stuff. Like how, if I tell teachers, you just call the office and if you need to go to the bathroom, somebody's going to be down there to cover you. Like what, it, call anytime. Guess how many times teachers actually call? Rarely. But, they, just knowing that that availability is there can be huge in creating a need-satisfying environment.
And I think just to piggyback on that quickly is that I would never ask people to do something that I wouldn't do myself. So that also can happen on a day-to-day basis. Like, you know, like don't expect someone to put down the cafeteria tables if you wouldn't do it yourself. So
100%. Yeah, really good point. So Belinda asked a question. Did I say I sent the check-in form as a survey or asked people in person? I sent that check-in form as a survey. So that specific question is a Google form that I would just send out. I asked staff, what would be the easiest way for you to do this check-in? So that's a virtual check-in for everybody. And then, of course, like I try to get around and talk to as many people as possible because those conversations are so important. We learn so much just by being in classrooms. I know we need to run through this really quick, but just another idea that we're always impacting each other with our behavior, and that impact can be negative or positive. And that is whether we mean to or not. Like even if we're walking down the hall and like I have 500 things on my mind and somebody walks by me and I don't give them eye contact or smile at them, I'm impacting them with my behavior because they might think, and they often do, oh, is Allison mad at me? Like she didn't see me. She didn't smile at me. She's usually smiling. Like what's going on? So as a leader, just having that awareness that our impact is quadrupled or like multiplied because everybody is like wanting, teachers are pleasers. They want to please us. And especially if we have great relationships. So just understanding that we are always impacting each other with our behavior and then supporting staff to know that they're always impacting each other with their behavior is really important. This is a presentation I did. Actually, this was in, I think, South Dakota. Because I always remember because they put mud. And I'm like, mud, really? So I asked the question, what might make a teacher feel unsafe at school? And look at what's biggest in the middle. It's gossip. I need to start wrapping up. And that's something that we have control over, right, as staff members, as a community. And we can create a culture where everybody feels safe because they don't have to worry about adult bullying or gossip. And then this is, I asked a question of 200 Michigan principals. And look at what came up with the biggest in the middle. And I'm like, you guys, we have control over how evaluation feels in so many cases. So just really looking at what's within our control. And if we can help teachers feel safe at school, then it's going to be more of a need-satisfying environment. A couple quotes to wrap us up. The words we tell ourselves have even more power than the words we tell others. We are our own storyteller inside our head, so make sure that we're holding ourselves accountable for treating ourselves at least as well as we treat others. And then this last quote is, all you need to do is move inch by inch toward the person you want to become. That is enough. You are enough. And so I am obsessed with serendipity, which is why I have four books that have serendipity in some ways in the title. But The Path to Serendipity Through the Lens of Serendipity, The Princess of Serendip is a picture book that tells the origin of the word serendipity, and then The Serendipity Journal is my most recent book, and it's a middle grades realistic fiction chapter book that takes a lot of the concepts I talked about today and puts them into a compelling story for middle grade students. So if you're interested in checking those out, I just wanted to share that with you. And so Kim and I don't know if we have any time for questions, but we are so excited to have had this opportunity to share with you and to learn from you and with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. It was a great opportunity to be with you this afternoon.
And Kim, someone said it was one of the best webinars they've ever been to. So high five.
Elbow.
Good job, both of you. Good job. Thank you on behalf of NAESP. I agree.
Thank you. Bye.